back. Hop, we're here. We're recording. We're talking about video games. And I'm Fenrir765, if you didn't know that, Hop. And you're Hoptimus, the man that used to make the mouth music that we all loved. And, you know, we had to go get a fancy intro song that still slaps and is awesome. But I do miss the mouth music Hop days. I'm not going to lie. You know, you want to bring us back anything just right now? Just a little taste of what Mouth Music Hop was all about?
No.
All right. Well, I tried.
Not today.
That was for you, Dead Meat. I'm sorry. We couldn't make it happen. But someday, someday in the future, it will come again. We will get Mouth Music Hop to serenade us with some tunes that we can enjoy for a moment. But we are the AdultGamer.com community podcast, or the TagCast, and we're here to talk about video games. And, you know, we're just adults. We like to play games, and we have lives of things in the world that we keep us busy. But when we get a chance, we turn on our little plastic boxes or machines made with silicone, and we just let us bathe in the light of our monitors and TVs and enjoy the world and the rides that are provided to us, because there's a lot of really good games out there right now. My God, there's a lot of really good games. And I've been sucked into one lately, and I don't think I'm ever coming back up. I think I am forever going to be tarnished in the world of Elden Ring. I think
that was the longest run-on sentence I've ever heard you say in my life.
Oh, I'm sure I could add a few more in there. But I think I'm forever in there. So,
well, it's nice knowing you.
Yeah. I mean, like, I've played a little PUBG. I've played a little Halo. I got to try out Rogue Company for the first time, which that game's a lot of fun. And I kind of want to go back and play some more of it. But the world of Elden Ring is just, I mean, it's taken over the world. It seems like everybody's talking about it in every place that I've seen. So it's awesome. And I will say this, last episode we talked about the games that defined us, and The Legend of Zelda Link to the Past was one of those games that defined me as a gamer. This game is giving me those same vibes. I will just leave it at that. That's my last statement on Elden Ring, and I'll go from there. But enough about me, Hop. What have you been playing, sir?
Let's see. Little PUBG, Battle Garega actually broke 6 million, which I'm pretty proud of. That's a one credit score. King of Fighters 15 is still awesome and amazing and quite the hit on Fight Club. And then there's a game that came out, maybe a year and some change ago. Little gem called Cyberpunk 2077. It officially got its full next gen patch, and now it is a fantastic game. You get 4K 60 performance mode it's got resolution scaling. It doesn't run at a full 4K all the time, but it's pretty nice looking, and it just looks so much better. There's more crowds, more things going on. They improve the screen space reflections. There's better lighting. There's better textures. There's also a 4K 30 frame ray trace shadow mode, which is okay, but I'll take the 60 frames over the 30 any day. I'm super sucked into the game right now. I booted up my save and I thought, well, maybe I'll start another game. But as soon as I booted up my save, I remembered where I was and just got sucked right back in. And it's been fun playing. And Hybrid and I have been going back and forth on private chats about, like, hey, did you do this time? Or what happened this time? Or did you follow this? Or, hey, did you find this? And I'm really enjoying it. I'm sad that the game came out in the state it did, but I'm glad now that the game is fixed. It's on sale right now for another few days, Xbox Digital Store, for $30. If you do not have Cyberpunk and you were looking to play it when it's fixed, now's the time to grab it.
I think there's also a free trial, right? You can,
yeah, like 5 hours or something.
And then if you buy it, it carries over, so it's not like you have to start over. But that,
yeah, the save, yeah,
it's at least worth a try in the end, I would say. But I have not gone back to it. There's just been, Dying Light 2 at the beginning of the month.
Well,
and then
Dying Light 2 I put on the back burner,
yeah,
hoping they patch it like they did Cyberpunk, because I really like Dying Light 2, but it's got some issues.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it before on the show that games and the way that they come out now is, you know, kind of the first month or two is the beta test right now in a lot of ways, or in Cyberpunk's case, a year and a half. But I'm glad it's where it is now, because it definitely needed the love, and I am excited to go back to it. I just don't know when. So, I mean, hey, it's a good problem to have, right? To have all these choices, all these things to get into, all these things to play and mess around with. And I think as the year goes on, it's just only going to, you know, this idea of all the things that we have, all these games coming out, is just going to keep getting bigger and bigger. Because, I mean, in March, let alone what we're going to talk about in a little bit, just there's a ton of games coming to us. But before we really get into what is coming in March, there's a lot of news. I have found some really cool stories and some stories that, you know, we kind of saw coming. But the first story, I think, is probably like the story of the last few weeks for me. And that is Playground Games has gone through and added sign language support to Forza Horizon 5. And it seems like this is like one of the first games to really ever do that. And Playground brought in a teacher at one of the deaf schools in England, and they talked about it. This whole report I read off of IGN.com, and they talked about all the reasons why, like, for being deaf, hard of hearing, it's a lot more difficult just to read. It's not just the subtitles. It can be exhausting because it's, you know, like reading a second or third language, because British Sign Language, American Sign Language, they are, you know, they have their own syntax and grammar and all this stuff. So it was just a really interesting article, but it's really cool that they're bringing in, you know, sign language support. And it kind of be interesting to see how they can do something like this as time goes on in several other titles and games. And I just think that's a really cool accessibility feature that seems to be missing in this platform, but I can understand why it's challenging to add that. This next story wasn't really a big surprise. Evo, big fighting competition, is coming back this year, and Super Smash Brothers won't be there. Evo was bought by Sony last year, correct, Top?
I don't remember. I believe so. Yeah, right after the show last year, they announced it, I think.
So it wasn't quite surprising to see that. It looks like Nintendo is going to search out their own fighting game competition for Smash, and, you know, just go from there. The next one, no surprise here that Gabe Newell, CEO of Valve, has said that NFTs are bad. Well, not entirely. He said that, pretty much stated that NFTs, you know, the principle of them and the idea behind them is great, but because of all the nefarious people out there, they have pretty much ruined the idea of what could be good of NFTs for the time being. So, you know, hybrid good guy, Gabe. He is pretty much like, we're not going to do NFTs on Steam for the time being, which is kind of interesting because they had something very similar to NFTs in Counter-Strike Go, Counter-Strike Go, Global Offensive or whatever. In a lot of ways with their, you know, skins and spawns. I know Sith was a big proponent of that game and he could give a little bit more detail on that. But I just thought that was interesting given the nature of that. Did you ever play Counter-Strike Go or, you know, follow any of that, Hop?
Just the horrible 360 release.
That was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was terrible, and they never patched it. So
I think they realized their money wasn't there for them. So next up, Knockout City developer, I believe Valen Software, they are going free to play with their game Knockout City, as well as they're self-publishing the title. They're breaking away from EA. And, you know, I kind of think this will be an interesting story to see how it works out in the end. I don't know really all the details behind anything, like in terms of like what did EA really provide this developer in terms of their game. But if you remember from our games of last year, the best multiplayer game for me was Knockout City. I love that game. I still enjoy going back to it every now and then. It's just fun. It's, you know, it's lighthearted and it's good to have a laugh with. But I think it's awesome that the studio is, you know, betting on themselves. They're going out there and they're going to say, we're going to take this on from now on and go free to play. even though they were part of Game Pass through EA Play, as well as it was a PS Now game or PS Plus game of the month. So a ton of people have gotten access to it. So it has pretty good life to it. I mean, there's a lot of people playing it, and I had a lot of fun with it. I'm excited to see what they do, not this next season, but the season after, when they finally are completely their own publisher. I'll be excited to see what they do and keep going from there, because I think it will be, I think they have some cool ideas, and I hope that, you know, maybe EA wasn't holding them back or whatever. I'm just a dude with a microphone somewhere in Indiana, right? I don't really know what's going on, but I just hope that it keeps working out the way it's supposed to for them, because they're doing a great job. Speaking of EA, what was that, Hop?
I said, yeah, I wish them the best too. I mean, it's a cool game, and hopefully they get a lot of players.
Yeah. Speaking of EA, they had some kind of reports come out that apparently they're, you know, calling FIFA's bluff on some things in terms of their soccer game, whatever you want to, whatever side of the pond you're on listening to the show. But EA's pretty much come out and said that, you know, FIFA is only worth its name on the title of their game. And they said that mainly it's only really worth it when the World Cup comes around every 2 to 4 years, depending on how you look at it. But they were just like, and they also came out and said several other statements that, you know, FIFA has limited EA on how they can expand the game in terms of the game modes, different types of modes outside of the 11-on-11 that is, you know, a traditional soccer match. So, you know, I don't know if this will change anything. Maybe they'll still spend a crap ton of money to keep the name of FIFA, or maybe FIFA will go, sure, you can do something different with it. It'll just be interesting. I thought that was kind of crazy that EA would say, yeah, you're only worth your name right now, and that's it. We don't really need you. You need your name at this point, maybe. So the news keeps on rolling out of EA. BioWare is prototyping the next Mass Effect, which obviously means Mass Effect 4 is a long ways away, as well as another executive, or not executive, but like lead on Dragon Age has left the studio as well.
I saw that. Yeah, it was on his Twitter too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been a thing after thing. I mean, in the last, 3 or 4 years, they've had several high top employees, you know, managers and CEOs or whatever you call them, lead developers leave BioWare, and it just seems like this project, I don't know, like the turnover that they're having is kind of a little scary for this game, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a winner on paper right now.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the Dragon Age Inquisition, Dragon Age Origins. Dragon Age 2 was fun. I know it's not the favorite for a lot of people, but I don't know. BioWare just seems like it has been not in good shape for a while now. And I don't know if that's because of EA. I don't know if it's because of several things. I mean, Mass Effect Andromeda obviously was panned by a lot of people. I loved it. Anthem had its issues, but it, you know, had some interesting things that, you know, there was something there. It just didn't land the way it was supposed to. And now all these changes and Dragon Age 4, we don't know when it's going to come out or anything of that nature or how far away it is. But they're also, you know, spouting out details and teasing Mass Effect 4. So I don't know. I'm a little concerned with the way that they are showing and sharing things. Sometimes showing and sharing too early is a bad idea. I mean, look at Beyond Good and Evil 2. It's right. Still nowhere near anything.
You'll never get it.
Probably not. Now, this one was an interesting story because it came out and it was like wildfire, as if it was fact, but it seems like there's still maybe some walking back happening with it. But Call of Duty 2023 was supposedly delayed out of the year, so it'd be the first time in decades or so that Call of Duty would skip an annual release. But then
I don't think that's going to be the case. I think we're going to get 2023, which is a sequel to Modern Warfare, but I think that game's going to get a 2-year lifespan, and we'll be waiting 2 years for the next Black Ops games, which is going to hurt me.
So, very badly. Like, are you saying that there's still going to be something in 2023?
Yeah, it's going to be Modern Warfare, but it's going to last 2 years. We won't have a Black Ops games till 2025.
You mean 2022 is Modern Warfare, 2023 is...
Or, yeah, this fall, 2022. 2023 will be nothing, and then okay. 2024 will be Black Ops. Sorry.
Nah, that's good.
The years are weird now. COVID messed up my...
Well, I guess, like, in a statement to IGN, they said that next year we'll have premium and free-to-play Call of Duty experiences.
Yeah, the premium will be Modern Warfare 2. The free to play is going to be Warzone 2.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. You know, it's all marketing speak, isn't it, at the end of the day? So either way, it still will be a shock to a lot of people that there won't be a brand new Call of Duty game next year. But coming up to the end of the news, last week or the last episode, we talked about Capcom's teasing something. What could it possibly be? Well, it was Street Fighter 6. And Hop,
like,
how
the
excited
worst
are you?
Logo of all time.
Yeah.
It's too early to tell. Like, it was just a CG trailer. So, really, game, I couldn't say anything. And there's no platform announcements. I'm hoping this is multi-platform across the board, at least between Xbox, PlayStation, and PC. That is what an internal memo leaked, but SF5 was PlayStation exclusive because it's Capcom ran into development problems and Sony bailed them out. So I'm hoping it's across all platforms. I'm just stoked that I'm getting that Capcom fighting game collection this summer on Xbox, and it has Street Fighter 2 Hyper Edition, the anniversary, and the Darkstalkers games on it. So that alone is good news for fighting game fans, with rollback code and lobbies. So you better believe that's going to be a fight night staple.
Would you like them to do Street Fighter 6 a la the Resident Evil engine, using that kind of...
Oh, I'm sure they're using their RE engine. It's just, you know, it's a base. It's just like Frostbite or Slipspace or Unreal. It's just Capcom's in-house engine.
I didn't know if, like, you would like that vein of, I don't know, pseudo-realism that the Resident Evil engine kind of goes for.
That's just the art direction. I don't think that really has anything to do with it.
Okay, cool. Next up, with all the major acquisitions going around the world, Microsoft buying, you know, Activision Blizzard, apparently the CEO of Ubisoft came out and said, like, you know, we'd like Ubisoft to remain independent, but if somebody came around and said, hey, you know, here's a pile of cash, you know, they'd take it to their board of directors and review the offer made to them. Which is interesting because they spent a lot of time fighting really hard to avoid acquisition. I can't remember by another company. I don't know. But they were fighting off somebody who was trying to do a hostile takeover of Ubisoft. And now they're kind of sitting there like, hey, you know, yeah, with the right offer, we'll probably take it, and, you know, we'll...
Maybe you throw us some money, you know?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Just a little bit, and then it's okay, you know?
With that being said, like, I don't think Microsoft would obviously buy them. I mean, they probably could, but I don't think they would.
Yeah, it's interesting as far as the acquisitions, because as much as I would love to see Microsoft buy up Sega so we could get the entire Sega back catalog on Game Pass and maybe some revival Sega titles, the One of the Japanese publishers, the guys that developed Bayonetta, they were saying that would probably never happen only because the way that the Japanese business companies work compared to American companies is just not going to fly. And I was like, oh, the only thing is that leaves the door open for somebody like Sony, who's a parent Japanese company, to gobble up Capcom or Sega. So that's just interesting thinking about that.
I
We'll see.
think, Hybrid makes a good point. It may or may not have been intending we're open to acquisition. It's just that they're stating that they're obligated to take up and consider any such offers, which I think is the fair point and probably more or less what was being said there. And to get outside of, or maybe to get ahead of anybody talking about, oh, would somebody buy you or pay, would you be open to selling? I just thought it was interesting and it does concern me a little bit. I do think there's value in having, I mean, I still am shocked that Microsoft bought Activision Blizzard. Like, it still is just, whoa, right? But I see value in the fact of EA, Ubisoft staying independent, staying in their bubble of we're gonna make what we want to make and we don't have to be beholden to anybody else. I think that's great for companies like Square and Capcom and Konami, all of them. I wish that they could continue to do that. But the reality is, we're getting to the point where mega corporations will take over a lot of things, and that's a scary thought. Who would you rather in charge of, Ubisoft or Capcom, Konami, Microsoft or Sony or Apple or Facebook or sorry, Meta, Google? Those are thoughts that would be kind of scary to think of. I mean, there's also the other option that Taco Bell could take over everything as well. So
Just like Demolition Man.
I'm glad I knew you'd pick up on that reference, but it was just interesting to think that they
Shameless
would.
plug, we covered Demolition Man on that Retro Futurist Culture
There you
podcast.
go. Finally, my last story I picked up this week. This one I thought, I think it took off faster because of maybe some of the words, like the hot take you could get from it. But it sounds like in a, internal company meeting, EA was discussing Battlefield 2042 and the misfires, if you will, of that game. And they talked about how it failed to meet expectations of their players. And then they went on and kind of discussed several kind of key factors of maybe what contributed maybe to that. And, obviously the first one, COVID, working from home, all that stuff impacted it. But one of the things that came out of it that people said, like, oh, EA's blaming Halo Infinite for their bad game. Well, I don't think that was the case. I just think that they were stating that, yeah, our game didn't come out the way it should have, and we screwed up there. But having Halo Infinite surprisingly drop at the same time as our game and also be as polished as it was really hurt us in a lot of ways. It really kind of made it harder for our game to stand up when it was not up to par. So I just think that it was interesting that the internet ran wild with that phrase, like, how could you blame Halo Infinite? And I don't think that was the case in the end. I think they just realized they didn't make as good of a game, and in order to survive this market now, you have to make a good game. And I mean, I guess not necessarily the case initially, because people can come back from the dead with that, but it's still just interesting to see how it just took off like wildfire. Did you catch any of that? See any of the
I
takes on
only
that?
cursory looked at him. I was just like, ah, whatever. I didn't pay too much attention to it. I've brought up many times before, I've tried to get into Battlefield over the years. It's never really been my game. The only one that I played even somewhat more was five, and that's because just a bunch of tag people were playing five, because I was too late to get into four. Everybody said Hardline was a waste of time, so I didn't bother. Battlefield 1 came out, and it was the same time as Titanfall 2 and Gears of War 4, so I just didn't have time. And by the time I checked out Battlefield 1 when they gave it away for free, I was like, hey, I'm not into this. But then Battlefield 5 came out, and a bunch of people from Tag were playing it, and it looked like fun. So, and they were going to come out with a Battle Royale, which was
Firestorm.
Not that great. Yeah, so, yeah, like, I just don't even really care about Battlefield 2042. And not out of, like, malice or anything. I'm just not into Battlefield.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, and let's just face it. It did not come out in a state that was...
Yeah, it got lots of bad press, for sure.
I mean, like, they didn't do themselves any favor to people like me who enjoy the Battlefield games but was on the fence after the beta... After the first launch or first part of the launch window that when it came out, I had no desire to pick it up and purchase it, and I still don't. And there's nothing really getting me to go back to it. Maybe they'll fix it. I don't know. But like I said earlier in the show, there's just too much going on. There's too many games coming out. And you know what, Hop? You're about to tell us everything that came out in March, and I don't have time to go play a game that would frustrate me with its bugs and glitches, right, and all the things. So, Hop, go ahead and tell me what I can go buy or play on Game Pass or whatever in the month of March.
All right. So, March 1st, the first release, I was originally very excited, and then I heard there's no co-op. And so now I just don't really care. Shadow Warrior 3 is dropping on PC, PlayStation, Xbox. Shadow Warrior 2 had one of the best co-op modes ever, and I'm sad that 3 is back to a single-player game. Conan Chop Chop. It's like a cartoon tower survival or something of Conan. I don't know. PC, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, Puzzle Quest 3, PC, iOS, Android. Elex 2. That looks like it's on everything. Far, Changing Tides. That's on just about everything. Pants Quest on PC. This sounds like it was made for us on the Tagcast, where we don't want pants.
I was going to say, is that the goal, or are you searching for the pants? Because depending on what the objective is.
We're burning all the pants.
Oh, okay. Burning. Then, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Little Orpheus.
Actually, this one you're going to have to scratch because it was delayed indefinitely.
Okay, never mind. March 2nd, Zombie Rollers Pinball Heroes, PC and Switch, 35mm, PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch. A Musical Story, that's about on every console known to man. March 3rd, Babylon's Fall, PC and PlayStation, and Beholder 3 is on PC. March 4th, Gran Turismo 7 on PlayStation. Man, people have been waiting a long time for that. Same day, Triangle Strategy on the Switch, Survival Quiz City on the PC, and What Lies in the Multiverse, PC, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch. March 8th, Have a Nice Death, Steam Early Access, PC only. March 10th, Chocobo GP on the Switch, Submerged Hidden Depths, that's on PlayStation, PC, and Xbox. Aztec Forgotten Gods, PC, PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch. WWE 2K22, March 11th. That's on PC, PlayStation, and Xbox.
The first one in a couple years.
Yeah, it's been a minute. March 15th, we get Phantom Breaker Omnia, PC, PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch. GTA 5, this sounds like a next-gen re-release because mm-hmm. It's only launching on PS5 and Xbox Series X/S. March 16th, Tunic, PC, Xbox, and
so
Xbox.
So excited. So excited.
Yeah. March 17th, The Settlers on PC and Persona 4 Arena Ultimax, PC, PS4, and Switch. March 18th, Strangers of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origin, PC, PlayStation, and Xbox. March 20th, Rune Factory 5 on the Switch.
I believe so. Sorry, the zero got dropped off.
Yeah, that's what I figured. March 24th, Lumote, the Mastermote Chronicles, PC, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and Stadia. Memoir Blue, PC, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch. March 25th, Kirby and the Forgotten Lands, Switch only, Ghostwire Tokyo, PC and PS5, Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, PC, PlayStation 4 and 5, Xbox One, and Series X. That's the game that's going to take over my life for probably a couple months. King Arthur Knight's Tale, PC, March 29th. Along with Ikai, PC and PlayStation and Switch, March 29th. Crusader Kings 3, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, March 29th. Death Stranding Director's Cut, PC release, March 30th. March 31st, we get Weird West for PC, PS4, Xbox One, and Coromon for PC and Switch. Whew! That's a lot of games.
It is.
I will be probably working on my backlog up until the day that Tiny Tina's Wonderlands drops on the 25th.
Yeah, I mean, Tunic and Tiny Tina's are the two games I'm looking forward to most this month. And I've said this in several places, Tunic gives me Death's Door vibes, and I can't wait to get into that. But what I do know is we are recording on Tuesday, and Tuesday happens to be part of our Forza and Halo game night rotation nights, right, Hob?
Yep, and tonight as we're recording, it's March 1st, so it's Forza Horizon 5. Next Tuesday on March 8th should be Halo Infinite, and they just alternate weeks. Thursday nights are community game nights. This Thursday, March 3rd, we're doing a World War Z. March 10th, Mortal Kombat 11, which is a fantastic game. March 17th, Quake, which is on Game Pass, supports a really cool deathmatch mode. I don't have a game for the following March 24th. Anthem has not updated his list, so when we get that information, we will drop it here. Friday night, Fight Club is back in full effect. King of Fighters 15 has stolen our hearts, and we may have also picked up a new player. Another guy from Ruminations Radio just picked up an Xbox Series S, and he may be joining us this weekend for some KOF 15. I'm excited. Fen, what is going on with the paper reading books?
Well, I think they may be taking this month off to catch up on several of the books and series that have been picked over the last few months. Are You Dead, I believe, will be updating me on the next book sometime in the next month, I imagine. If not, we'll definitely catch up with a new book starting in the month of April. So, Hop, you know, on the show, we like to kind of just dive deep into a topic that, you know, impacts us as gamers, or we like to see what's, you know, give our thoughts on something, the two cents of two distinguished gentlemen who clearly know all there is to know about video games.
Talking about Siskel and Ebert?
Yes. Yes, yes, I am. How did you know? You know, sometimes we kind of like it gets kind of challenging to figure out, you know, where to go next with this. And I feel like this topic here is an interesting topic because there's several different ways to look at it as we discuss it. But I want to talk about like game reviews with you, because lately it's been kind of a hot topic for several reasons. And, you know, before we go really too far into this, you know, I just kind of want to get your input on how do you go about like the game reviews? Like, are you like me? Do you just kind of look for, you know, I guess synopsises? Wow. That was not what I, you know, meant, but do you look for like a quick, just rundown of what the game
elevator pitch? Take.
Yeah, the elevator take. You know, or do you look for a full in-depth review on something and hit all the?
I guess it depends. It depends on the game. I kind of know what kind of games I think I'm gonna like to play. So if I have an idea of that, okay, that game looks cool and I want to play it, and it's from a developer I've never heard of before, or something, I may wait and see a review. There's certain reviewers that I trust more than others. Like I really like ACG Gaming on YouTube. Like he's a no nonsense guy. He kind of gives it to you straight. I like the way his review is buy, wait for a sale, or rent. That's kind of his, if he thinks a game is really, really amazing at launch, he'll tell you to buy it. If he thinks that it's good but not, that great, he'll tell you to wait for a sale. And if he thinks that it could be something you like but maybe wait and check it out, he'll tell you to rent it. And I kind of like his system. I mean, like, for example, Tiny Tina Wonderlands is coming. I'm not even going to look at a review. It's Gearbox. They haven't let me down with a single Borderlands game yet. I've enjoyed all of them. I know that not everybody has, but for me, I've enjoyed every Borderlands game. Wonderlands looks fantastic, so I'll just be jumping in, head first into that. But like, let's say a game like Elden Ring. It's getting glaring, glowing, crazy good reviews. Even ACG. I'm not a huge fan of the Dark Souls series. I played the first one and I liked it, but I was like, I really don't want to suffer through this again. Like, I do my own personal grinding in my own life in other things that I don't like. For my video game time is super relaxing time. Like, I grind really hard at the gym. I grind really hard at jiu-jitsu, constantly trying to level up there. So the last thing I want to do at home is fight some really frustratingly hard bosses. So that game's probably not for me, even though it gets amazing reviews. I don't know. I just went off on a tangent there. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I mean, I was just asking, how do you take reviews? And you gave me the answer. So, I mean, I will agree with you. Like, I look more at just kind of like a broad strokes paintbrush on a game if I could, right?
I'm looking also for technical efficacy. If they're saying the game is buggy, glitchy, and it crashes a lot, I may wait for a sale or wait till it's
Yeah.
patched.
And I really think that. I like to see just kind of, especially with the game I'm excited about, right? You talked about Borderlands Tinytina's. I'm with you on that. Like, I am day one with that game, regardless, right? Elden Ring, I knew I was day one. Once I knew it was from software, it was going to be in the Dark Souls vein. Like, I just
I
knew.
was so close to pulling the trigger because it looks so good and all the reviews were so good. But then I thought of my time playing Dark Souls 1 and I was like, no, no.
Yeah, and you would like, I think you would find joy when you have the co-op moments, but you probably wouldn't enjoy this game on your own. So it's amazing. And like I said earlier, I compare this, people have been comparing it to like Zelda Breath of the Wild. I've never played that game, so I can't compare it to it. But the sense of wonderment in that, like, I'm just exploring constantly and finding new things, and I know I'm not even scratching the surface of what the game should be. And that is what I am loving about it.
That's what I'm loving right
And
now with the fixed Cyberpunk
yeah.
2077. I drove around on a motorcycle today for 2 hours, not doing anything, just
Yeah.
driving around, doing random side jobs, helping cops, like
Yeah.
fighting cyber psychos, just
Yeah.
having a blast. Found some new guns, got some new Mantis blades, cut some dudes up. It was a good time.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, but back to the reviews is like when I looked at Dying Light, like I looked at the broad strokes because like I was on the fence with that game. Like I didn't know if I would really want to get it still. And so I kind of looked at the broad strokes and I read a lot of things like, and that was a game that was kind of polarizing, right? There was a lot of really positive reviews, there was a lot of super tech negative reviews, especially because of some of the bugs and game breaking things that happened. And eventually I decided, I'm gonna stick with it and get it. And so far I've enjoyed my time with it. Unfortunately, a better game has come out and I am just gonna go to that game for a while. Like again, when I say better game, that's my personal opinion. I'm not saying that, somebody else may find that differently, but it's just where I am.
And that's what we, I think what we all have to remember with reviews is it's one person's critique or opinion about a game. Like I thoroughly am enjoying Dying Light 2. I just put it on the back burner. I want co-op to work. Right now co-op is busted. Mm-hmm. And that's half the reason why I think a few of us all got that game is we're like, oh, this would be so fun to play co-op. We run around and do parkour and kill zombies, and it's been broken since day one. So
yeah. Another question I want to ask you about reviews is, do you think that, I guess, journalists and people and or, you know, content creators who do reviews of games, do you think that there is an unfair pressure on them to have a review ready to go, say, you know, whenever they lift the embargo, whether it's a day or few days before or day of game release? Do you think it's an unfair pressure for them to do that, especially considering the state of gaming today where games are coming out kind of in a mess at times, like especially like their launch doesn't go smoothly? Or, you know, do you think some of those things should be factored into the review of a game?
Yeah, there's definitely I think so, and a lot of the bigger review company sites, IGN, GameSpot, they will go ahead and review. And one of the things I like about somebody like ACG on YouTube is if he thinks that the game is not worth giving a score because of patches or issues, he will say so. I don't remember, it was a recent game where he would not rate it. He's like, I'm going to give it another couple of weeks because I don't feel like it's fair to you guys to give you a score right now when they're promising this patch and this and that. And so, yeah, I do feel like the major sites probably feel like, oh, we got to give a review. And the publishers are probably like, you got to review it. And the publisher, I'm sure there are some times where the publishers are throwing these sites advertising money towards a good review. I wouldn't doubt it at all.
I also think it's interesting. Like, it seems like more sites are coming out with, you know, they're separating like games that have traditional single players and traditional multiplayers. They're separating those reviews into separate categories. You know, because a single player obviously may not necessarily rely on a lot of things, so that may be a lot more polished experience, but obviously server communication and all the different nuances of multiplayer may crash or not work effectively. I mean, hell, like, you know, Black Ops Cold War, you know, had a pretty decent review cycle on their multiplayer, but me and you had a horrendous time until somebody figured out turn party chat overlay off. You know, we were, you know, like it was
that,
just,
I mean, that was a technical snafu, right? On their part, the crashing.
Yeah. But it was enough to get me to stop playing that game for a while until somebody figured that out.
Right.
you know?
Yeah.
And granted, like, I don't know. I mean, I think the Cyberpunk debacle really kind of,
I really hope that gave the publishers and the industry a kind of a wake-up call.
You would think so.
And then definitely rushed, and it but I also feel like Dying Light 2 maybe not as in bad a place as Cyberpunk was on launch day, but it's not too far ahead of it in the fact that co-op is still completely broken for everybody that I know of, at least console wise.
Yeah.
I don't know about PC.
Well, I just remember Cyberpunk, you know, a lot of people reviewed it on PC because that was the only codes that came out, and
because it ran really well on on a really beefy PC.
And so, but then when it came out, when the full release came out on all the consoles, especially the base like Xbox One and PlayStation,
PS4,
it
ran like crap.
Yeah, it was an unplayable experience. So, you know, there's that piece of it too, right? And I think that leads me to my next question is, like, I just think reviewing things, you can only do so much, right? I mean, we talk about this, we're adults, you know, we all have day jobs or night jobs or whatever it is that we have, but jobs, we have families, we have obligations beyond the hobby.
Adulting.
Yes. Beyond the hobby. So we can't dedicate all this time to it. So you kind of rely on some of these outlets to kind of give you the information. And But at the same time, they only have so many man hours and people that they can put into something as well. So there's no way that they could possibly, especially these multi-platform, multi-tiered games. Like, you know, if you look at Xbox, I mean, you have Xbox One consoles all the way from the One S through the One X through the Series consoles. There's no way you could really put a game through its paces on all those consoles and really give it a fair shake. And so you really only can do what you can. But, you know, it's just wild to think that we're dealing with, you know, just, I guess, access to too many things in too many places. So we'll never really get a full picture of any game until it's in the hands of the masses, right? And people can, you know, either bitch and complain about it, or they can celebrate or whatever it is. You know, because I just think about that with Cyberpunk. Like, we would have never known until, you know, we never knew until the game actually fully released that it was a dumpster fire from the beginning on those lower end consoles.
Yeah, and luckily we have a great technical asset like Digital Foundry. They were the only ones that kind of went in and said, here's the deal with the console releases. They're like, if you're on a... Basically, the best version to play at the time was the Series X. They're like, it'll run the game somewhat smooth. If you're on anything else, be weary.
Yeah.
Because the PS5 didn't have a optimized version at all. It was running the PS4 source code. But the way that the PS5 plays PS4 games isn't quite as nice as the way the Series X would run Xbox One games. So,
and that Digital was a really Foundry, release. They are...
Yeah.
They're awesome. I mean, the way that they break down games in terms of frame rates and performance and all that, I do kind of like, I get why they compare the different systems to each other, but it's kind of like, I'm like, guys, come on, you're adding fuel to this.
Well, only because people are going to ask that. Yes. I think that's the only reason they do that, because everybody wants to, I don't really care. Like, yeah.
I mean, I think it's interesting to like kind of see some of the differences, but like my eyes can't tell the difference that intensely on a lot of these games. So,
right.
But I think that they're awesome because they look at a game from a technical standpoint. They don't really base their understanding or base their like they try to be objective rather than subjective, and you can't really review a story objectively in a lot of ways. There's some things you can do, but objectively, but most of it is a subjective experience. So I thought it was just, I think they're awesome in the way that they approach it. And I think it's great that it gives, you know, us gamers and players the option, if you have a multi-console setup, to be able to decide like, okay, you know, maybe I want to get this on PlayStation, or maybe I want to do it over here instead. So I do think that there is that benefit of that with Digital Foundry. And at the end of the day, I think it's awesome that we have access to so many different people, websites, news, you know, outlets, content creators. You know, you mentioned ACG. I kind of pick up, I watch some of his videos every now and then. There's, you know, people who dedicate all their free time and content time, creating time to specific games like Call of Duty or right. PUBG or whatever. Yeah. And you can kind of really get their, you know, honest take on changes or new games in similar genres. And we can do that. And it's great that we have access to all this. So my final question, which this kind of kicked a hornet's nest because of Elden Ring receiving so many perfect scores in a lot of places, or really high scores, you know, a lot of the reviewers have come out and said, look, we haven't finished the game yet. And my question for you is, do you think it's important for a viewer to finish a game before giving a score?
I mean, if the 30-minute loop of a game is so fun and so fulfilling, like the original Halo, you could have told me that, because it had this 5-minute combat loop that was highly addicting between shooting grenades and melee and semi-exploration. I mean, it turns out that whole original game was just a good time and a fun ride and had a good boss battles and a good ending. Yeah, I think that's kind of subjective. I would feel more confident if I was on the fence or I wasn't sure about a game and they posted a review score and they finished the game and everything and they gave it a glaring score, I would probably feel more confident in buying it then. If I was already like, I'm probably going to buy this game, but I'm not sure, and they reviewed the game and said, we're not done with it yet, but this game is freaking amazeballs, I would probably go, all right, well, I'm going to get it. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I mean, Ubo brought up a point, like, there was a lot of reviewers saying that they just didn't have enough time to really review Elden Ring.
And again, that's the publishers being like, we don't care where you want to score, because they're pushing advertising money, they're trying to sell. It's revenue stream. The shareholders want the revenue stream in this quarter. Everything's run by fucking the dollar. You know what I mean?
True.
The year, wherever you are. So,
well,
That's just a shitty thing, and that's one of the reasons why I like the reviewers that aren't part of this circle of publisher fed review systems on these major sites. That's why I look to a lot more of the independent reviewers myself, like Digital Foundry, ACG, those guys.
And I will say, I think Dying Light did the same thing. They sent their game out with not a ton of time before reviews were supposed to hit, or the embargo would lift, rather. These massive games are becoming, so massive that it's got to be impossible or unfair to ask somebody to get through it in a matter of time that's good enough to really give it a fair shake, right? Because eventually you hit like an exhaustion wall. You get to this point where, I mean, hell, I could take the next 2 weeks off of work, and I don't think I could still finish Elden Ring at the rate I'm going, because I'm just like, I'm getting lost in it and having fun exploring and like, oh, there's a lake over here, let me go see this. Oh, there's a building here, and holy
that's
shit.
That's the thing that's fun about those kind of open world games. You can get completely distracted for weeks and forget the story.
And I had to eventually with I'm sure Tony's gonna lose his mind over this, but Red Dead Redemption 2 is so much of a massive world that I just got to a point where I was like, I just need to see what happens, and I just gotta beeline through this main story, because I'm done trying to do all these there's a random stranger that needs help. I just could not do it anymore. But for some reason, I'm more into the world building of Elden Ring than I am, the Wild West with Marston and Arthur Morgan.
Different strokes for different folks.
I'm
with Tony. I love Red Dead. I just need to get back to it.
No, I love the game. I'm not diminishing. I still think Red Dead Redemption 2 is one of the top games of the last decade, so I think it's amazing. But my point was I hit a point with that game, and maybe I'll hit that point with Elden Ring, where I just I'm done, I need to just start burning through the story here. So I think that the main thing with the review systems is, if you can't finish the game because of how massive it is, but you're going to drop a score, I think that it's fair to just say, look, I haven't finished it yet, still working on it, but if I had to rate it right now, this is what I would give it. And at the end of the day, or at the end, when I get done, I'll come back and revise that score, or revise what I would say about this game, and we can maybe make changes from that.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'd be good with that
too. As long as you're honest and open up front that you didn't finish it, and that there could be things that could come across that could change it, I think that's important to say. And then having, obviously, an updated, statement at the end of it. I guess there's one last question I want to ask you, Hop. You kind of mentioned it earlier. ACG does buy, wait for sale, rent, don't buy it, or don't play at all, right? Then you have other companies or people who rate it on a 5-point scale or a 10-point scale, or whatever it is. What is your preferred review metric that, like, if you had to review a game, what would you use, I guess?
You know, it's hard to say. I think I don't, like, number scores don't do that much for me because, again, they're subjective. Like, okay, for example, if I were to tell you that I think Battle Garega is easily a 9 out of 10 on a review scale for this old 16-bit shoot 'em up, you would play that, and you may not agree with me. You'd play that and go, dude, I would give this like a 4 out of 10. This is some old school, hard as balls, fucking shoot 'em up game with is hop smoking. But if I did a review more similar to ACG long form that said, hey, if you're into these kind of games and you want a game with all these extra features that does all this, that lets you tweak certain things, this is a definite buy game, you know? I don't know. Yeah, again, it's a subjective. That's why Ubo was talking about GamePro or like EGM, where they would have four different reviewers on a game. And there was always, like, on EGM, I always kind of agreed with Sushi X, who's the guy. He was into fighting games and shoot 'em ups, you know, so I kind of knew with that guy.
Yeah,
Tony's got a good point too. He's talking about how do you review a game like Destiny that's constantly changing. Well, generally they review them at the time of release, and then that's
which I think is unfair, because, like, you look at Destiny, it's obviously not the same game it was when it released however many years ago.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, same thing with Sea of Thieves, right? Sea of Thieves got panned because there was no content.
That game was so bare bones at launch. It was nothing.
Like, the gameplay was great, but the content wasn't there, and now it's completely the opposite in so many ways. And I think that, you know, with live service games, I do think you need to update reviews. Well, but I will say, in the sense of Destiny, it seems like people will review the new expansions, right? They will, you know, Destiny itself may have whatever review it was when it came out, but now that the Witch King Queen is out, they're reviewing the state of Destiny based off of the Witch Queen. So whatever the Witch Queen review is will be essentially what the current review of Destiny is. So I just think the big thing is, for me, I like the idea of just trying to find reviewers that you like, that kind of preach to your sensibilities and the things that you like in games. You know, I like ACG, I like a few others. Ryan McCaffrey from IGN is a guy that I like to read his reviews on, because he kind of, I feel like, has the same vibe for me. I like to get their take on a game, especially after I've played through the game. I like to kind of go back and catch what other people might be saying about it. But I think I would prefer, you know, maybe not necessarily like go buy or rent or anything like that, but I think I'd prefer, like, just kind of like a one word or, you know, a one phrase, like masterpiece, good, bad, terrible, you know, like, I just kind of like that whole, you know, just one adjective that describes the game, you know, masterpiece, whatever you want to do. Like, I think that doing that is the best way to describe a game based on your feeling, because I really do think games invoke a feeling, and, you know, trying to quantify that into a number is really hard to do. But, you know, everything in this world we have to quantify by numbers, right? So
I mean, for some people they like that quick glance number reference.
Yes. You know, and a lot of people use numbers to justify their take on things. So either way, I just hope that reviewers can be honest, tell the truth, tell their truth about a game, and go from there. And I, you know, I say this several times on the show, but just because somebody reviewed it and gave a score that you may not agree with doesn't give you a reason to be an asshat to them. So don't be an asshat. That's it. You know, just enjoy, take the content that you can and go, you know, okay, fine, they disagreed with me, but I enjoyed it, move on. You don't need to go around and threaten people because they published an article that disagreed with you. So don't be an asshat, keep going, have fun. And at the end of the day, you know, just be a good person. So we are the AdultGamer.com community podcast, Tagcast for short. We like to talk about video games. We like to have fun. We like to do all sorts of different things together. We have a pretty cool little community going on. We'd love for you to come join us. If you are not part of our Discord, please head over to theadultgamer.com and you can join our Discord. I am Fenrir765. You can find me on Xbox or at TheFenrir765 on Twitter. And the beautiful man that I get to, you know, sit across the microphone with on every first and third Tuesday of a month is Optimus Fett. Tell us where we can find you, sir.
You can find me at adultgamer.com Discord. From there, you can get my Xbox gamer tag if you want to play some Tiny Tina's Wonderlands or Forza Horizon or PUBG. Maybe some Call of Duty if they patch Vanguard. Check out my podcast, Retro Futures Culture, on ruminationsradionetwork.com. We have plenty of other shows to check out there you might be interested in. Thanks for being my co-host, Finn. It's always a pleasure to be on the tag cast, as I prefer to call it, so I don't trip over my words. And if you're interested in hanging out with a bunch of people that like to game with others that are adults over 21, and also get into furious arguments on our Discord over Elden Ring, come join us at theadultgamer.com.
Yes. Until then, I will catch you guys on the flippity flip.